Well, good morning. It's good to be with you today. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Marcus, and I am a centurion in the legions of Rome. That may not mean much at all to you, but to me, it means everything. For 23 years, I have served Caesar faithfully, and I have risen in the ranks from being a junior officer to being a non-commissioned officer in the greatest army in the entire world. I command 100 men, and in 2 years, I will become a citizen of Rome. This vine staff, this is the symbol of my authority throughout the empire. I knew that I would be visiting your church today, so I left my blade at home. But you should know, that blade has shed the blood of thousands. If any man knows what it is to see a person die, it's me. But here I am, stationed in the land of Judea. Let me tell you, that is not the way I saw my career advancing as a junior officer. The Jewish people, they had no real army. They had no soldiers for us to face on the field of battle. These were a pathetic and backward people, and they did not even have the good sense to bow before the throne of Caesar. And it was because of their stubborn belief in one holy and righteous God. They had laws. They had so many laws, they didn't even know what to do with them all. But the one law they would not break was they would not bow the knee to anyone or anything but their one God. But that's not why I'm here today. I'm here to tell you about one of their people, one in particular. I have to tell you that I have seen thousands of men die, but I've never seen one die like this. No, this was more than just another death. I'm talking about a man named Jesus of Nazareth. I know you've all heard of him. He was from a little tiny town in the region of Galilee, a region where there were many Gentiles. A little town called Nazareth. You have towns like that, Turlock, Wasco. You know what I'm talking about. Jesus went around and he was turning everything upside down. He chose a group of disciples, and some of them were fishermen. A few were tax collectors. Lots of women followed him, and honestly, several of them did not have the best reputation. No. And this Jesus, he refused to abide by the Pharisees' laws, the religious leaders of the people, their petty laws. He refused to do that. He went around and he preached about love, love of God and love of neighbor. He offered peace to people. Peace. We Romans know about peace. We gave peace to the civilized world for 200 years. You can read about it in your history books. The Pax Romana. We know peace better than anyone else. One day I met a friend of mine, a colleague, you might call him, fellow centurion. His name is Lucius. And he told me a story that I have never forgotten. He said that one day his most trusted servant, and they're hard to come by, his most trusted servant fell ill to the point that he even became paralyzed. And Lucius told me that he had heard about this Jesus of Nazareth, not only about his teaching, but also about his healing. He had heard that this Jesus had had caused the blind to see and the lame to walk, and he had cleansed lepers. And so Lucius, my friend, went to Jesus. And he said to Jesus, "My servant lies ill at home." And before he could even make a request, Jesus said, "I will go with you to your home." And Lucius looked at Jesus and he said, "Jesus, I am a man with authority just like you. I tell this man to do that and he does it. I tell that man to do this and he does it. No, you just say the word and my servant will be healed." Lucius told me, as sure as I am standing right here today, Lucius told me that at that very hour, his servant got up from his bed and walked. Lucius is a sane man, like me. I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know what to make of that at all. This Jesus. Finally, I had a chance to see for myself what he was all about. You see, Jesus finally, after 3 years of threats, Jesus had finally been arrested by the Jewish leaders. He was charged with claiming to be the Messiah of Israel, the Son of God, a charge which they considered blasphemy and worthy of death. But you should know that the Jewish people, we do not give them the freedom to execute anyone. They must be tried in our Roman courts of justice, the finest courts in the world. And so they brought him before our Roman governor, Pilate. I was there. I was in the room. And from the moment he walked in the room, I sensed that something just was not right. Pilate, this man who had sent hundreds to be executed for lesser crimes, Pilate hesitated. He questioned him. He seemed torn about what he should do. But the crowd was persistent. And finally, Pilate, the politician that he was, finally, Pilate gave in. And he sent Jesus to be flogged. And then he gave him over with strips of flesh torn from his back and his chest. He gave him over to be crucified. He gave him to me. He gave him to me and my men. As I said, I command 100 men. Many of them are young men. And you know how young men are, right? They like to fool around, like to have some fun. And so I let them do that. And they took this Jesus of Nazareth, and they stripped him naked. And they took a scarlet robe and they put it around his back. They found a crown of thorns and they smashed it down upon his head. And they spit on him. And they put a staff in his hand and they said, "Hail, King of the Jews!" The strangest thing about it is he never said a single word. It was almost like he was carrying out a script that had been written beforehand, and he knew the part he was meant to play. Well, I knew my part, and my part was to stop the fun and carry out the sentence against him. And so we took the crossbeam. We call it the patibulum, and we gave it to Jesus. It was our tradition for the man to be executed to carry the patibulum all the way to where he would be crucified. And so we began walking the journey to the cross. And I had one of my four men, that's all I took with me now, I had one of my four men walk in front with a wooden sign, an inscription with the charges against Jesus of Nazareth. And it said, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." And we took the long way through the city. We always did that when we led a criminal to be executed. We wanted these Jewish people to see. We wanted to induce fear. We wanted this to be a detriment to crime. But just as we came to the gates to go out of the city, it was very clear that Jesus could not go on any longer. He had had it. And so, as was our custom and was our legal right, we found a man nearby. And we conscripted him into our service, and we gave him the 100-pound patibulum to carry the rest of the way outside of the city to the place where Jesus would be crucified. His name was Simon. I later learned that. Simon was a proselyte, a Jewish proselyte from North Africa. He was there, as many, many proselytes were, for the Passover. And I think Simon had squeezed through the crowd, hoping to get a look at the spectacle, and little did he know that we would draft him into our service to carry the patibulum of Jesus. And then we finally came to the place outside the city. It's called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. It's a God-forsaken place. And when we got there, the first thing that happened, as was the custom, was some women of Jerusalem came and they offered those to be executed wine mixed with gall. It was something to numb the pain of what was about to happen. And get this, Jesus refused it. He refused to deaden the pain. It's almost like he had another cup to drink, and he would drink it to the dregs. And then we spread his arms, and we nailed the spikes into his wrist on that crossbeam. And then we raised up the crossbeam, and we gathered his dangled feet, and we nailed the spike into his feet. And then the misery began. It wasn't long before Jesus began to push up with his feet, to gather a breath, and then he would collapse down in exhaustion. I have to tell you, the worst part about this duty for me and my men was just the misery of waiting, the monotony of waiting and waiting and waiting for a man to die while cries of agony were all over the place. It could go on for hours. It could go on for days. The only concessions were some strong drink. And not only that, there was a custom that said that we could take into our possession anything that the executed man had in his. Believe me, Jesus of Nazareth didn't have much. But he did have a nice robe. And so I allowed my men to cast lots for that robe. We heard that robe had healing powers. Well, you learn a lot about people at moments like this. And one of the things I have noticed is that people are rarely as heartless as they are when they are watching another man they despise suffer. Jesus was crucified between two criminals, and these two thieves, these two rebels who deserved what they were receiving, hurled insults at him one after another. The chief priests, the scribes and the Pharisees who were there at the cross, they cried out, they taunted him, "He saved others. Why can't he save himself? If you're God's son, then why doesn't God come down and take you off that cross?" Even passerbys, people just walking by, got in on the act. "If he is God's son, let him come down from the cross." The only ones who weren't speaking were a group of women huddled off to the side. They weren't saying a word. In fact, these women were weeping, and I wondered if perhaps they were amongst his disciples. Strange thing about Jesus. When normal criminals are crucified, they lash out in anger. They spit on us. They curse us. They threaten our families. Again, Jesus did none of that. He was silent. Like a lamb going to slaughter. He said absolutely nothing. Until the darkness came. Strangest thing. From noon to 3, when our Middle Eastern sun shines the brightest and the hottest, it fell completely dark. A blanket of darkness spread over our land. And the people who surrounded the cross were frightened and they backed up. My own soldiers were frightened. And then there was a cry from the cross. Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. In your language, that means, my God, why have you forsaken me? Honestly, I thought, well, that's more like it. That's what a man like this should say. If he was God's son, if he is the son of God as he claimed, then at that moment, his father, his God, had forsaken him. And then the end came. And once again, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. Most men on the cross, they die quietly. They have fallen unconscious long before, and they just breathe their last. But Jesus went out with a loud cry, like a declaration, tetelestai, one word in my language, 3 in yours. It is finished. And then almost immediately, I know this is hard to believe, but before the darkness lifted, the earth shook. The earth shook. Just as he died. This land of Judea is known for its earthquakes, but nothing like this. I am told that not far away, tombs cracked open. Someone even reported that the curtain in the Jewish temple was split in two at that very moment, that curtain that leads into their Holy of Holies, where they say God dwells. And then there was just dead silence. I didn't know what to make of all this. This was not like any death I had ever seen. And I began to wonder. For the first time, I began to wonder, what if this is God's son? What if he is God's son? Maybe all the things that were said of him, even there at the cross, even by his mockers, what if they were all true? They mocked him as the king of Israel. What if he is the king? The religious leaders said, if he is God's son, let him come down. Well, maybe it is because he was God's son that he could not come down. They said, he saved others. Let him save himself. Maybe in order to save others, he could not save himself. He cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? What if that was part of the plan of God? Well, I'd like to say the day was over, but it wasn't. Some bodies, you must understand, will hang on the cross for days. But as I was there with my men, I noticed a man approaching. He came up to me and he had papers in his hand. His name, by the way, was Joseph from Arimathea. This Joseph was a wealthy man, I was told, and he was a member if you can believe it, of the Jewish Sanhedrin, the leaders of the Jews. He came with papers, and he had received permission from Pilate to take the body of Jesus down and to bury that body in his own tomb, in the place reserved for him when he would die. Only wealthy men had tombs like that. This was a bold and a generous act that that Joseph performed. And so he took the body down. All of this, by the way, had to be done in great haste. It had to be done before the Jewish Sabbath began, which was at sundown. And so in haste, he took the body and he walked off with the body of Jesus. He prepared it for burial. He put the linen cloths around his body, placed it in his own tomb. Again, it was a bold and a generous act. But that's not all that happened that day. A little bit later, it's interesting what happened. I was summoned by Pilate. And Pilate wanted me to station one of my men at the cross. Apparently, the Jewish leaders had come to Pilate and said, listen, this Jesus predicted over and over and over again that he would be raised up in 3 days. You must station a guard at the tomb because we know what his disciples will do. They will come and they will steal his body and they will say he's been raised from the dead. And so Pilate ordered me to send a man to guard the tomb. And he went. And not only did he guard the tomb, but he sealed it. No one would ever get in or out of that tomb. And then Sunday came. And the rumor began to spread. This rumor began to spread little by little throughout Jerusalem that indeed this Jesus had been raised from the dead. I didn't believe it. How could that possibly be? My own men were there, remember? So I brought him to me. And he told me, he said, there was another earthquake. On Sunday morning, the earth shook as it had before. And not only had the earth shook, he said the stone in front of the tomb was rolled away. And when he looked in, there was no body. Again, just the linen cloths lying there. And I wondered, how could this possibly be? Perhaps my soldier, perhaps he fell asleep and the disciples came and stole the body. I couldn't get this out of my mind. And I again began to wonder, maybe, just maybe, this is God's Son. And then I began to think, what if I, a centurion of Rome, what if I had put not just an innocent man to death, but the Son of God to death? That hung on my conscience for months and months and months as the rumors continued to spread about this Jesus. I wondered about it all. 8-9 months later, everything changed for me. I met a man. His name was Matthew. And Matthew was one of the disciples of Jesus. In fact, Matthew had been a tax collector when Jesus called him from his tax booth and said, come and follow me. And I met Matthew by accident. But maybe it wasn't an accident. Matthew told me about this Jesus. I told Matthew what had happened that day. Matthew, I told him all about the death and how I'd never seen anything like that. I've seen so many deaths, but never have I seen a death like that. And I told Matthew I felt I was guilty of the execution of an innocent man. Matthew told me I was not guilty because I had executed Jesus. He said, indeed, that I was one who put him on the cross, but it was my sin that put him on the cross. It was my arrogance, my pride, my independence, my thinking that I could do this life in my own strength. Yes, that put him on the cross. And it wasn't just me, he said, not just my sin, my pride, but that of all the world. And he explained to me that Jesus died on that cross to pay for the sins of the world, and that he was risen up to give all of us the hope of eternal life. And at that moment, for me, it all came together. And I believed. I'm a Roman centurion. I am a soldier in the greatest army in the world. But at that moment in my life, I bowed before Jesus. I bowed before Jesus. And a few days later, yes, I was buried in the waters of baptism. And I was risen up a new person in Christ. Still a soldier, but now a soldier for Jesus Christ.